This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is Hemant.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support this show. We appreciate that. Are you still alive?
Still alive, still kicking. At the end, it's going to be me and Cher and cockroaches.
Forever.
After the apocalypse.
Excellent.
Cannot
very
keep
good.
Me down. God, what if I die this week and then they play this at my funeral?
I mean, I'll be the one suggesting it.
Yeah, true.
Let's start with, speaking of which, this is actually sad.
Oh.
We did have someone die this week. Daniel Dennett,
yeah.
One of the original, quote, new atheist authors, mm-hmm. Who wrote how many best-selling books
sure.
about philosophy and science. He died of lung disease last week mm-hmm. at the age of 82. The announcement came as a surprise to me. I guess it's not entirely shocking given
sure.
his age and some health issues he had had. I will say a couple things that I'm really grateful for with him, and one thing that rubbed me the wrong way. But the one, this is the time. There's no other time we're going to be talking about it.
Okay.
The first one is, of all the books he wrote, the one that I think I've recommended to people more than any others. And this is not, like, this is my favorite Daniel Dennett book. I'm saying anytime someone says, I'm interested in atheism, I'm curious about it, what would you suggest? It's never been The God Delusion. It's never been other stuff. Breaking the Spell, that he wrote in 2006, is the one I've almost always recommended.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because he does such a good job explaining how people ought to think about religion, but he doesn't hit you over the head with it. He kind of just lays out, this is the way
sure.
it is. This is how it should be. Here's what you should be thinking about. He talks about whether science can study religion, if it should study religion, mm-hmm. why religion develops, why belief in belief is so attractive,
sure.
and how we can move beyond that. I mean, it's not aggressive, but he didn't mean it to be. He just kind of got lumped in there because his book came out at the same time as, like, Dawkins'
yeah.
book.
Yeah.
But because it's not aggressive, I think that's what makes it impactful.
Mm-hmm.
He did write other books that I've heard people tell me they really like Darwin's Dangerous Idea, all about evolution. He wrote about intuition pumps and other tools for thinking and how you ought to think. They were equally provocative and informative. And maybe it's because he spent so many years as a professor at Tufts that he knew how to introduce those topics to an audience that may not have been receptive to them. So if other atheists, especially the ones in the spotlight, were off-putting, he was almost the glass of water to help you swallow a bitter pill.
Sure.
So in terms of books, huge legacy right there. The other thing I think he deserves a lot of credit for, is that in 2010... he and a researcher named Linda Lascola, they put out this fascinating paper they had been working on about clergy members who question God's existence.
Sure.
And, I mean, as far as a paper can leave a bombshell or of any kind, like, this was a big deal because this was not something that was talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And they found people willing to talk about it. These were working pastors who nevertheless doubted the very sermons they were preaching.
Mm-hmm.
They were literally in the pulpit and then talking to these researchers saying, I don't believe any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And the sample was small. I'm not saying it was random or anything. The revelation that they had is that these people exist. And I know we only talk to this handful of them, but they're out there.
Yeah.
And the question is, how do you bring them together? Because the one thing they need is anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
And how do they connect with each other? Because you can't put out a call for it without someone finding out
sure.
something. So those pastors needed to risk anonymity. They needed to remain anonymous
yeah.
for the sake of their careers, maybe their families, but they were so desperate to talk to someone. That's why they wanted to talk to these researchers.
Mm-hmm.
That paper eventually led to the creation of the Clergy Project,
yeah.
which is an online forum for religious leaders who no longer have religious faith. Word spread through that because it got a lot of coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Then people began joining in organically. And all of a sudden, like, I think in 2019, they put out a press release saying they had over 1,000 members in their forum. These are people that are vetted. Like, we know, like,
yeah,
the people running it.
Yeah, that's the important thing. They vetted them.
Yeah, it's not random people saying, I want to see what's going on here. Maybe I can dock some of these people.
Here's my white collar.
No, they submitted, this is where I work, because you got to know this is a safe place for these people to talk about stuff. And along the way, they were given opportunities to learn new skills, give themselves an off-ramp in case they want to leave. A lot of those members came out eventually, some publicly, some maybe more privately. Linda LaScola and Daniel Dennett put out a book where even more subjects were interviewed. It was called Caught in the Pulpit, Leaving Belief Behind. That became an off-Broadway play a couple years ago called The Unbelieving.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so none of that would have happened without Daniel Dennett's initial work. And again, that's an amazing thing to leave behind. The thing that rubs me the wrong way, and it's such a small part of his legacy, one that I didn't see anyone mention in any obituary I read about it, in other atheist conversations, people talking about his death and what he meant to them. I didn't see them discussing this either. But he dabbled in the same pattern of like anti-trans stuff as some of those other new atheists. Limited, but it is there. For example, we talked about Dawkins and how he had a recent conversation with this anti-trans activist, Helen Joyce, and they had a conversation. And it was disgusting for reasons we discussed on this show, I don't know, a couple months ago. She wrote a, quote, gender-critical book in 2021. Dennett publicized that book, calling it a sane, humane book. And then he added that the role we all play in letting people be who they want to be is a delicate balancing act.
Oh, that's no good, Dan.
As if accepting trans people is a sacrifice for us who are cis.
Yeah, that's no good.
American Humanist Association revoked a Lifetime Achievement Award that they gave to Dawkins on account of his anti-trans tweets, Dennett was firmly on Dawkins' side. He also promoted an embarrassing article written by the head of the Center for Inquiry claiming identity politics and cancel culture has torn apart the humanist movement, mostly because everyone was criticizing Dawkins for perpetuating anti-trans talking points.
That's no good.
The only thing I'll say is it's not something he dwelled on. Maybe he just felt, I got to come to my friend's defense or whatever it is.
Yeah, we don't understand the relationship between him and Dawkins. Yeah. This shit is very complicated.
So
that said, I mean, there's no excuse for touting anti-trans lies.
Yeah. So they were short-lived. Like I said, I don't think anyone really knew about it unless you were following him explicitly. So, again, I'll remember him for the other stuff. His books were far more reflective and thought out than some tweets or whatever he gave out. He deserves to be remembered for the projects he dedicated his life to and not, like, careless things you rattle off on the toilet. So that's it. I'm sorry to see him go, and that's it. I'll say more.
I had the opportunity to meet and interview him in 2014, probably 2013. And he was nothing but kind and generous with his time, and I would argue visibly nervous to interview him, and he was just very, very.
We interviewed him on this podcast way back in the day when
you and I did.
This is as we're recording this. This is episode 528. I think literally like episode like 14 or something is with Dennett. Like those are back in our archives somewhere.
I have no memory of that. That's weird. I remember the VeggieTales guy.
I've blocked out everything from pre 2022 pretty much.
Yeah, truly.
As far as this podcast goes. So, but yeah, if anyone's interested, those are in the archives somewhere.
Yeah, sad to see him go. He was a net positive for the world, I'd say.
That's the nicest thing we could say. Net positive. We can all hope.
That's all any of us can strive to be, is a net positive.
Last weekend, I had my in-laws over, and we needed to make dinner in a crunch. Instead of ordering out, we did something even easier thanks to ButcherBox. We were able to grab just what we needed and exactly how much we needed from the freezer. After that, everything else was a breeze. You too can skip the grocery store knowing you have the food you trust and the food you chose in your freezer. I know that might sound strange coming from me since I'm vegetarian, but they have a high-quality veggie burger that I absolutely love. They have options for pescatarians too. And if you eat everything, that's also okay. The food from ButcherBox is high quality, grass-fed, and free range. Have peace of mind knowing there are no antibiotics or added hormones. Sign up at butcherbox.com/friendly and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/friendly and use code FRIENDLY to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Let me talk about a Catholic priest in Michigan, because this story happened late last week. We didn't get to talk about it last week, but
you're
oh my God,
smiling.
Shit. Oh, this is so juicy of
oh,
a story.
Good.
It's great. Okay. Here's what happened. Last month, this guy named Dominic Thrasher,
dope.
Awesome name.
Fucking yes. Dope.
He is
Dom
an actor.
Thrasher?
Yeah.
Oh, now it sounds like a BDSM situation.
Yes.
Love it.
No, but he was an actor who turned to writing.
Oh, he's an actor. So maybe that's not his Christian name.
You don't want to go there. Because, no, he turned to writing. He had just, I think he self-published a children's book called The Adventures of Cece and the Sheriff. Seems like a lovely book. And he was invited, I think by a friend of his, hey, we grew up in the same town, and I know you because we went to school together. I work at this school now. Why don't you come and read your book to my kids? They would get a kick out of it because it's
adorable.
A children's book. It turned out his friend works at a Catholic school called St. Joseph the Worker School. This is in Beale
Saint
City,
Joseph
Michigan.
The Worker.
I don't know.
All right.
But he was like,
it's
yeah,
a capitalism
sure.
saint.
I would love to come to your school and read to the kids. By the way, he's been doing this at a bunch of schools all over the place. So, like, this isn't even weird.
What
I'm sure
age bracket are we looking at?
These are pre-K students.
Oh, okay.
Like,
littles.
Like 4-year-old kids mostly, which is perfect. It's the audience for his book.
Yeah.
So, as far as I can tell, everyone got a kick out of it. He enjoyed himself. The kids seemed to have a good time. All good. So, and by the way, this was happening in National Reading Month, which is March.
Hey.
Very nice. He said to like a reporter later, it went amazing. Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. The kids were so excited, and I actually ended up staying for snack time too, he says to the reporter. So sounds lovely. Good for him. Everyone
That's
had a great time.
Adorable.
Yeah.
Snack time.
So now we get to like a week
after. Do you think
after.
He got a little mat and took a nap too?
I hope so. And then we get to like Wednesday, March 13th. This is about a week after his event at the school, which again, went fine, and why would anyone care? It sounds like a pretty insulated, nice thing. So about a week later, the leader of the church that oversees the school, his name is Father Thomas Held, he posts on Facebook what amounts to an apology. And I'll read you what he wrote.
No.
Dear school parents and all parishioners of St. Joseph the Worker, recently, a guest who does not represent the values of our Catholic faith read to our pre-K children as part of our March's Reading Month activities. To my knowledge...
March is a mistake. It shall be canceled.
To my knowledge, the book and any related conversation was appropriate for our students. A St. Joseph teacher was present in the room at all times.
Oh my God, but...
I was unaware that the guest had been invited. As your pastor, I will see to it that a new vetting policy is put in place in order to minimize anything of the sort from happening again in the future. Okay. Thank you for your fidelity to the faith.
Fidelity?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. First of all, let's all be clear. He said nothing in that thing. He said a guy came in and read.
And it went great.
And it went great. Yeah. And it will never happen
again. And it was totally school appropriate. Everything was good. And yeah, not only will it never happen again, we're going to put in new policies so that this can't ever happen again. And the whole time you're thinking like, What's the thing that happened that you're trying to prevent?
This is why more people need editors than think they need editors, because usually when you say words, you want them to mean something, yes. And this did not. This failed that primary test.
Like, if that was an apology, it is not clear what he's apologizing for. That's how much he dodged the issue.
Right, genuinely, he just said somebody came in, we thought he was cool, and then we found out he was invited, and that will never happen again.
I don't know.
That's what I heard.
Like, what part of his existence violated Catholic values?
Can't
what happened that requires a new vetting policy?
Is he gay?
He is gay.
Oh.
That's it. That's the
Wait,
whole
seriously,
controversy.
That's it? Was his book about a...
Nope. Was the book about gay people?
Anything?
No. It was about, like, a truck and a cat, I'm assuming. It was about nothing. It was fine. It's a kid's book. It wasn't, like, an analogy. It wasn't some secret LGBTQ allegory of
yeah.
some... No, it was just a kid's book about, like, two friends or whatever. Like, it
oh
had
God.
Nothing to do with gay people, I promise you.
Outstanding.
The only issue here is that Thrasher himself is gay, and that's it. He didn't talk about that, by the way, because it's irrelevant. He just showed up to read his kid's book.
He just existed.
He existed.
And then how did my dude find out that he was gay?
Did he see
him at a club?
Yeah, did they see
the
each
ballroom
other?
Right. Or,
oh, nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
So it's not that Thrasher discussed his orientation with the students. He literally read to them a perfectly non-controversial, lighthearted book. But the crime, I guess,
Golly.
Is that he's a gay person who interacted with kids. I mean, even for the Catholic Church, that's a level of bigotry you don't usually
no,
see.
No, truly, because usually they do the whole, like, well, as long as you're not having sex. And I have to assume this principal did not personally have sex with this guy, so I doubt he can...
It's the new vetting process.
I mean, that would change things.
Uh-huh. So the church, you're right, the church's position is that gay acts,
yeah.
not gay people,
right.
deserve to be condemned.
Love the sinner, hate the sin.
Yeah, so
hypocrisy.
Publicly condemning the invitation of a gay author to read to students, that makes no sense even under the church's rules.
Right?
And the saddest thing about
this... And the fact that he sort of apologizes, but does not give any indication... Like, if I read that as a parent, I would be like, what the fuck did he say to my kid?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
like,
there's nothing quoted because he didn't say anything to
yeah,
the kids.
Yeah, like, what is so bad? And why... It's so bad you can't tell me what they did to my kid?
Now listen to how Thrasher reacted to all this.
Oh, please be cool, Thrasher.
It just angers me what he said. The way he made me feel, like I'm a predator or like a convict or something coming into the school. Thrasher said, this is from a news report about it. He said this isn't the first time his sexuality has been an issue for others. 12 years ago, I'm quoting, 12 years ago, I was asked to give this commencement speech at my alma mater, a private Catholic school. Then, once they found out I was gay, I've been openly gay ever since I came out, and that was at 21, so it was no shock to anybody. Everybody knew that. But once they found out, I was disinvited to give the commencement speech because
yeah.
being gay, I don't know, I'm going to ruin people or something. Then he adds,
poor guy.
I was diagnosed with ALS a year ago. I don't have a lot of time, so I just want to share my gifts and my love to the world.
Holy shit, that twist.
Uh-huh.
Oh, this poor man.
Yeah.
So ALS...
Come look at his face in the picture of the news report about this man. He's devastated.
God, we have to protect him.
Yes. He's every interview
please.
They did with this guy is like, he's the nicest dude.
Y'all, if you don't know, ALS is a degenerative disease that basically your body, my understanding is your body more or less stops working starting from the ground up. Is sort of my understanding. Hey, Dottie's
mad about it
yeah,
too.
She's furious.
And
it's terrifying. It's an absolute terrifying disease. I've known somebody who had it. It's just, I mean, can you imagine? It's a death sentence
yeah.
and you are looking down the barrel of some ugly years coming up. It's miserable.
So, horrible situation all around.
And the Catholic Church was like, we should support this man because uh-huh. he's a child of God and we believe all God's children deserve not to die horrible deaths and also be ostracized. Wait,
so,
that's their favorite fucking thing to do is ostracize and kill people.
Vetting
like
process.
The whole Catholic Church's jam is ostracization and murder.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So horrible situation all around because his visit to the school was literally a win-win for everybody. He got to read his book. The kids loved it. He loved it. Teacher loved it. Everyone left happy. It was the priest.
Sweet face.
It was the priest who decided to ruin things by reminding everyone that, hey, everyone, the Catholic Church, we're a bigoted institution, but here's where there's a nice twist. Mm-hmm. Parents wanted answers. because they wanted Tom Held, the father who sent all this out, the priest, they wanted him to resign.
Wow.
One parent wrote an open letter demanding that resignation, saying that Father Held had a, quote, inability to effectively represent the collective value of the parishioners.
Hmm.
The day after his letter was, that fake apology was posted, that was on a Thursday, the school had to be closed for safety reasons due to the backlash. On Friday, there was a massive walkout at the school.
Yay.
And I know it's a K-12 school. I don't know how many kids are in each grade to make this a valid, like, big protest. But that day, apparently, out of the 92 students at the school, 79 stayed home, I think because their parents said, you're not going to school today in protest, of how they were protesting how Thrasher was being treated by the church's
leader. Was that really everybody's
leader.
Uniform against the priest?
Because as far as we know, who's complaining to the priest about any of this? I don't know. The Diocese of Saginaw, which oversees this church and therefore this school, said that same Friday that Held posted that, said on Friday, the reason the pastor posted the statement on Facebook is because, you know, some parents and parishioners apparently complained about how he was in a same-sex relationship.
Oh, yeah? Who?
But also, who cares? Who cares even if they did? Because he wasn't asking to be baptized. He wasn't asking to be married in the church. He was reading a book to kids. If the new rule is that practicing Catholics are not allowed to breathe the same air as LGBTQ people, then Pope Francis ought to come out and say that. Instead, here's what the diocese said in the middle of their explanation. We are all created in the image and likeness of God and called to love one another. They said that in defense of Tom Held's bigotry.
Oh, that was in defense of I thought that was an anti-Tom Held thing of like, hey, let's not be dicks for fucking once.
The superintendent of schools in this Catholic diocese, Cormac Lynn, told parents they were working on setting up a face-to-face meeting between them and the bishop. His name is Robert Gruss. Gruss said that he also reached out to Thrasher, quote, in the hope of opening direct dialogue.
About what?
I don't know.
Direct dialogue? Like, are you a top or bottom? Like, what does he need to
What's
know?
What's the purpose? I don't know what the conversation
would have
been. And none of this, obviously, brought the temperature down because parents were still pissed off. So in the weeks after that, because again, I remind you, this happened like 5 weeks ago. In the weeks to follow, the intensity of the outrage just kept growing. There were protests on Sundays outside the church with signs saying things like, there's nothing righteous about bigotry disguised as religion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Catholics.
Yeah. Right?
Y'all are getting rowdy out here.
And last week, the diocese finally announced that Thomas Held will no longer be working with us.
Ooh, ooh.
They announced that, quote, it would be impossible for him to bring unity to the parish, and therefore he was resigning. This is what the diocese said.
Nice.
The division, lack of charity, and the wounds caused by the division in the St. Joseph the Worker parish community has brought deep sadness to the Lord Jesus. Jesus weeps when he sees division and disunity in the body of Christ, his church.
Which is a baby Jesus cried.
Which is a weird way of admitting that one side and only one side was causing those divisions due to a lack of charity. Like, it seems like they're really both sidesing this thing.
Absolutely.
They're literally blaming the congregation for its own mistakes.
Oh, boy.
The bishop refused to acknowledge the church's role in promoting bigotry. They won't admit that Tom Held went too far with this Facebook post. So the good news is that the priest, Tom Held, will no longer be leading the church.
Where's his landing pad?
I don't know. The bad news is no one in the leadership position, in any leadership position at this diocese, has come out and apologized for what he did.
Catholics don't apologize for things. I don't know where you've been for the last 2,000 years.
No one is admitting that his statement was disgusting and inappropriate. No one's going to be held accountable for any of this. We get to. And the other thing, to answer your question about his landing pad, he's resigning from this parish.
There it is.
There is nothing stopping him from moving 3 feet over to the next Catholic church and working there and spreading his poison over there.
And boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah,
this guy is just going to do the same thing in Wisconsin instead.
Yeah, like none of this is going to matter unless parents who send their kids to this school transfer their kids out of there.
Yeah.
And abandon the parish. Don't give any more money to this diocese. Don't waste any more time at this church. That's the only way these people will learn their lesson. Now, one of the parents who called for his resignation said to a reporter, "We can finally begin the process of healing and restoring the sense of unity that defines our community," which is a nice sentiment, but it only serves to give the diocese more credibility than it deserves. Like, the people of Beale City here, they need to heal and restore without the church getting in the way. And as far as I can tell, there has not been a push from parents to punish the diocese by, like, kicking them in the pocketbooks or anything.
Yeah.
I will say, Thrasher has responded to all of this with a statement of his own. He said, "A battle has been won, but the war is not over." Mm. And the bishop's comments, quote, basically gaslight and blame the parishioners for the reason why he's not going to be there anymore, which is still a shame.
Yep.
And he's right. And for that reason, any decent member of the parish, and apparently there are lots of them, they should make plans to get the hell out of there. The church leaders are not changing, and they are apparently better people than their church leaders.
Do you think, do you have like a monologue written that you do every other week about, this is all well and good, but what really needs to happen is people need to leave the church?
It is. I copy and paste it every
week. I was just wondering because it's starting to sound familiar.
Yeah.
No, you're 100% right. And frankly, it's gratifying to hear, because we've talked a lot about how actual boots on the ground Catholics who are just living their lives in like human clothes do not agree with a lot of the Vatican's teachings.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't... what did we see recently at... Was it Nazareth that they fired the lesbian basketball coach or fucking softball coach? As if they were shocked that a lesbian played softball.
At a Catholic school in our community. That is what happened. And students and parents
protested. And, like, it doesn't take a genius to know which way the wind is blowing, Catholic Church. Like, this is not... Like, you're going to take the L. Like, you're losing the hearts and minds. I don't know. I look forward to seeing more stories like this. Not about the sweet gay guy with ALS who wrote a children's book. The hero of our story.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Poor guy.
I know. I hope, as far as I can tell from his Facebook feed, he's still been doing readings everywhere else.
Yeah.
And he's getting a great reception.
If anybody knows him, will they give him a hug for me? He deserves it.
Yes. Let's talk about hitting kids. This is... I do segues. No, in Oklahoma, a Republican lawmaker... He's Christian. He argued this week that we should allow teachers to beat students with disabilities. Yeah. Because if we don't do that, the baby Jesus will also cry.
I hate when baby Jesus cries.
I know. It's really the thing they want to avoid.
He wants to beat disabled kids?
Yeah. Let me tell you the backstory here, because Oklahoma tried actually doing something halfway decent. Then this guy came along. Here's the story. Oklahoma, as it stands in the law, they actually allow corporal punishment in public schools.
Schools.
Teachers are legally allowed to, like, paddle kids
in
school.
Think of your worst high school teacher. That person could have physically assaulted you in Oklahoma.
As if your gym teacher needs more power.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, like, that's a problem in and of itself. It doesn't look like that's going away, so we'll put that aside for a second. But the law, as written, there is a carve-out exempting students with the most significant cognitive disabilities, that's the least you could do. That is in the law. Again, I want to quote this. The most significant cognitive disabilities, which is very open to interpretation, too. So teachers can theoretically spank kids, but a handful of kids are off limits because even the Oklahoma acknowledges they may not understand that they are doing anything wrong. Okay, so last year, and we talked about this last year, Republicans, because it's all Republicans in the Oklahoma legislature, they attempted to pass a bill, it's House Bill 1028, which was designed to say, you know that exemption we have that says it's beating kids is off limits when it involves the most significant cognitive disabilities?
Fuck that shit.
Why don't we just apply that to all students with disabilities? Or technically speaking, if you have an IEP, an individualized education program, anyone with disabilities, let's just make them all exempt. We don't have to debate whether someone's cognitive disability crosses the line or not. Like, that's dumb, right?
Excuse me. A bunch of white dudes are standing in a state congressional hearing, congressional meeting talking about whether or not it's okay to hit children if they have a disability.
Yeah.
And they're arguing about it instead of being like, hey, gang, maybe just no. Maybe right. just stop.
And
maybe
again,
just don't.
They still want to make sure kids without disabilities can absolutely be beaten
well,
by their teachers.
Well, because kids without disabilities, their frontal lobes are just like in shape at the age of six.
Yes,
and so they make good decisions.
That is
they
how
have
their science books work yeah. in Oklahoma.
Good impulse control, good listening, yeah. good attention skills.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Right, exactly. So
fucking slap
they were like,
that 8-year-old. Good job.
Again,
fuck.
In context, horrifying. Out of context, it's like, yeah, this bill is good. You should absolutely pass this. Why is there any controversy? It's the least you could really still do. So again, they were trying to pass that. Republicans were trying to broaden the exemption to apply to all kids with disabilities. Let's not hit any of them and not just parse out the ones struggling the most.
This
okay.
is...
One Republican was a co-sponsor of the bill.
Mm.
He literally signed on as a co-sponsor, even though this isn't really his issue, because he said, and I quote, there's going to be nobody who's for corporal punishment on students with disabilities. He thought this would be an easy vote.
Aha.
So, and then he realized.
You know, I love to see a Republican disappointed.
He realized, oh, right, Republicans in Oklahoma. They will always find a way to defend abuse in the name of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And so the reason we talked about this last year is when this bill was brought up for debate, a state representative named Jim Olson, he argued that the Bible says it's okay to hit kids as a form of discipline. So we got to have that option available.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah, Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. That's what he was citing. That is.
Wait, really?
Basically, that verse,
fuck
yes.
Yeah, I quoted the Bible.
And when someone challenged him and said, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics says you should ban all physical discipline against kids because there's so much evidence of the harm it causes in the long term, he said it didn't matter because, quote, God's counsel is higher than the American Academy of Pediatrics. There was another Republican lawmaker, Randy Randleman, Oklahoma. He said teachers have to have the threat of corporal punishment because how else are they going to keep their classrooms in order?
Well, yeah, when you were a math teacher, that was your whole thing,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
You had one of those paddles with the drills, the holes drilled in.
Yes. And like if your classroom is so chaotic that physical discipline is your only solution,
you're
a shitty teacher.
Yeah.
And if you think threatening kids, special needs kids, no less, if you think that's threatening them with abuse is the only way to maintain order, you're a shitty human. And if you think giving parents and teachers the right to team up to beat up special needs Excuse kids me. Is the only way to correct their behavior, you're a shitty politician.
Like,
so here's the thing. Last year, this bill sailed through the state house, as it should. Why would anyone be opposed to this? It was amended to give parents the final say on whether their special needs kids could
Hi,
be subject to abuse.
This is my daughter with Down syndrome. I do want to opt in for the abuse program, please. Do
that
I need
is,
to check a box or...
Yes, is
Wait,
the answer. That's
fucking,
literally what the
I
law
do
says.
Bits, you're supposed to be like, no, Jessica, that was too silly. We're going to rein it back into reality.
They amended the law last year to say parents have to opt in to allow teachers to beat up their special needs kids.
Hemant, I was doing a joke.
Yep.
Are you confused again?
Nope, don't worry. It's Oklahoma. They said teachers cannot just beat up kids under their own volition.
They need the parents' explicit written permission.
Check the box saying we can beat your special needs
now,
kids.
Now, do you think they give them a list of, like, this is what we might do? Slap in the face, hit upside the head, uppercut,
yes.
knee to the groin. Like,
let
what
me
are-
tell you what the bill says.
No,
it specifically...
Heaven, it does not!
Yeah, it says
Jesus.
That when it says you are not allowed to do the following to, like, special needs kids in this bill, it says we are prohibiting teachers from, quote, hitting, slapping, paddling, or using any other means of inflicting physical pain.
That's a paddling.
Yeah.
You ever seen Simpsons?
Yeah. Yep. Yes. So that bill passed in the state house. And it was going to be passed in the state senate, but because of the timing and they had other shit, I guess, they needed to do, the bill just kind of sat there.
Sure.
Until...
And meanwhile, kids are just getting their heads knocked together by teachers.
I'll give you numbers in a second.
No!
But this week, senators brought it up again. It's been sitting in a hiatus for like a year. They brought it up again, and this time they removed the opt-in clause for parents. Which is good, because they're saying, no, teachers just cannot abuse any children with disabilities. I don't care if their parents opt in or not. You just can't do it. Anyone
how
who has
get
an IUD,
to this point
Oklahoma Republicans. Okay, so if you have an IEP, you can't hit the kids. That's what the law says. Should have been a unanimous vote, right? Mm. Right. So on Tuesday of this week, Republican State Representative Shane Jett with two T's, he decided to take up the mantle.
Shane Jett with two T's?
He is white, yes.
These are outstanding names.
Yes. So here's what he said to basically say, this bill is so wrong, you guys.
Oh,
why
no,
are we doing this?
Haven't.
We got to have the ability to beat kids with disabilities. Let me tell you what he said. This is a longer clip, but you got to hear all of it because it just goes from bad to worse. The one thing I will say is I edited this clip because he went on for like 20 minutes. Mm. This is about 2 minutes and a half. So there are cuts in between this. He didn't say this all at once. But feel free to chime in if you hear anything especially crazy.
Oh,
effectively,
I don't need your
permission. We're taking a tool that has been in the hands of parents and in the hands of schools to maintain discipline. Mm. And we're removing it from the parents' prerogative and saying, we, Big Brother, the state of Oklahoma, knows what's best for your child, and we're removing an entire motivational tool.
Beating kids is motivational.
Motivational.
From discipline
tool.
In the classroom.
Yeah, next scene.
And this is an erosive and a corrosive element in the United States whenever Dr. Benjamin Spock published a book that said, don't discipline your children, don't spank your children. And a lot of people don't know that. His voice was elevated because it fit a particular agenda. Dr. Benjamin Spock was a socialist.
Socialism?
He ran for the People's Party. That means he's a communist.
I hate the people.
He's a communist.
I already cited Proverbs 13:24.
He's a socialist, so he's a communist.
Whoever
spares the rod
hates the child, but he who loves them disciplines them.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Mm-hmm.
And we're
I
saying the
one,
state
remember?
Of Oklahoma has unilaterally decided if you have vision impairment, you cannot be disciplined, even if your parents want that. We're going to unilaterally take that away from our schools and our parents, more importantly.
Wow.
If you are hearing impaired, suddenly you're in a different class, you cannot be disciplined. And we've already
what
made it abundantly clear that children
on?
Can misbehave.
Here's the worst part coming up.
Regardless of their abilities or inabilities, capabilities or incapabilities.
Wait for it.
Are we sending a message that we don't love our children?
Oh.
At the end of the day, you're looking at socialist / communist principles versus biblical principles.
He's not wrong.
Jewish culture, Christian culture, and any common sense culture understands that if you don't discipline children or you create a class of children that cannot be disciplined, those discipline problems are going to cascade through the rest of society. And we're seeing that now from Dr. Spock telling Christian parents, don't spank your children, and they follow Dr. Spock instead of the Bible. Dr. Spock was a communist who ran for president with the Communist Party. This is communist ideology. I urge you to vote against this bill. It is bad public policy.
There we go.
Did the back half like it was like karaoke. He was like mouthing along the words.
I'm looking at the transcript. It just goes from bad to worse. So let's summarize what he said there.
Prick.
This is a Republican who thinks hitting kids,
it's so
special
important.
Needs kids, is the best and only way to teach them right from wrong. Mm-hmm. If we love children, he argues, well, then we ought to be able to abuse them. Mm-hmm. And how dare Dr. Spock, the famous parenting book guru, I had to look this up because I'm like, what were his politics? I wasn't familiar with his politics.
He was a communist, socialist.
Apparently. He pushed for universal health care.
Fuck him.
The decriminalization of abortion and homosexuality, guaranteed minimum income for families, and the end to the pointless war in Vietnam. What does that guy know about anything? Horrible, horrible dude,
oh
right?
Oh my Christ, yeah. Fucking... Like, they get so deep into their own narrative that I don't think they can hear how fucking unhinged they
Dude,
sound.
He literally said, like, we've decided in Oklahoma that if you have a vision impairment, what, you can't be disciplined? If you're hearing impaired, oh, you can't be disciplined now? What?
Like, okay, first of all, oh my God. Okay, so I did write my college thesis about, like, deaf culture and ASL. And so I would just like to kind of tap in on that because I understand what he is trying to do, which is to separate cognitive disabilities with you know, like
physical disabilities,
blindness, deafness, maybe wheelchair use or whatever. But like the decades and centuries of abuse that deaf people suffered at the hands of hearing people is no fucking joke. These are kids who are basically like treated as if they were being stubborn for not being able to hear. So this is like, yeah, it's stupid and silly and way out of pocket. But like, he's also, I mean, this, not to be this person, but like, eugenics is next. Like, that's, if you think that like hitting a kid because they didn't respond because they're deaf when you talk to them, like, this is the kind of shit that will happen. I just can't.
And you have to think, especially,
your life's goal is to make sure people can hit children. And my question is, what has he done to a child that he is defensive of?
Man.
That is my question. Don't you?
And he has kids, and I don't know.
It just seems to me that the people who are the most defensive of physical discipline are, it's not unlikely to me that they are perpetrators of quote unquote discipline / abuse. That would be my guess, and are just feeling very,
protective of themselves. Are we sending a message that we don't love our children?
You are.
That's what he's saying. Like,
he is.
That if we don't beat up kids in wheelchairs, then we're telling them we don't love them.
What is the matter with people?
I don't know. And again, you have to think that a lot of these kids who might be acting out are people coming to terms with their disabilities. And so, like, the fact that they might be acting out, or that, again, it doesn't matter if you have a disability or not. If you're a kid who's acting out, guess what? It happens to everybody. The idea that, what, a whoopin' is the only way you're going to stay in line?
It's haven't lost his G's. Where did they go?
Like, it's just a crazy way to think. But again, if all of you listening to this, you know this has long been a core belief in fundamentalist Christianity. Like, hitting kids is a core belief.
Mm-hmm.
Michael and Debbie Pearl wrote an infamous guide to faith-based abuse. It was called To Train Up a Child. Mm-hmm. It's a book that tells adults how to, quote, like, well, not quote, like, to properly hit your kids. Mm-hmm. And it is as awful as it sounds.
You can't just hit them willy-nilly. There's rules.
There's rules. They literally go into, here's the size of the paddle or whatever. They say in that book, you should physically discipline kids as young as 6 months old with, quote, the same principles the Amish use to train their stubborn mules.
Actually, as somebody who works with a couple Amish-owned horses, the Amish are famously pretty rough on their livestock, so maybe let's not look to them for our disciplinary rules.
Let me give you some numbers here. Oklahoma educators reported using physical discipline how many times in 2017-2018 school year, which is the most recent federal data we have available?
Genuinely, I think zero.
3,968 times physical discipline was used. The federal government reported that corporal punishment was administered at more than 1,800 Oklahoma schools. So 1,800 schools, nearly 4,000 times. That's how many times kids were
subject
to corporal punishment.
Wow, fuck me, because I genuinely assumed this is one of those, like, it's on the books, but nobody does it.
Yeah.
And nobody can take it off the books.
Oh, but it's there. And they're using it.
Holy shit. Can you give me details about, like, the sort? Like, are we talking?
No, I don't. I wish I did. I wish I knew how much of this is a paddling. How much is something else?
Like,
what are the methods you're using?
Is it a literal slap on the wrist, which is no joke? Like, you know.
Are we waterboarding them in the principal's office? I don't know. But basically, where we're at right now is learning about systemic racism, not okay. Mm-hmm. Tulsa Massacre, no, that's off the books. Mm-mm. But beating kids with disabilities, got to make sure that stays on the books.
Otherwise, baby Jesus will cry.
Right, all because Christianity teaches these people that abuse is more effective than compassion. I want to play for you one more thing he said during his, like, 20-minute long rant, because there were people saying, you guys, this is effing insane. This is foolish. And he had a response to the people who called this a foolish thing to fight against. He's like, no, this is not foolish. Here we go.
You want to talk about foolishness? We've been talking about foolishness. Foolishness is calling miscarriages abortions. Foolishness is calling transgender sterilization affirmation.
What?
Foolishness is killing a baby in the mommy's womb and calling it women's health.
Yeah. So if you're supportive of abortion rights or trans rights,
sorry,
you're foolish. I'm not foolish. I just want to whip kids in wheelchairs.
What was the thing about calling a miscarriage an abortion?
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
If you have a miscarriage and you physically have to have, like, the suction or whatever, that is technically an abortion, even though it's not a viable fetus or something. And he's like, oh, yeah, you have these pro-choice people saying, oh, you have a miscarriage. I don't know. I don't know where
it
he's going
make
at.
Any
he's
sense.
Saying we need to protect women who have miscarriages, but that counts as an abortion, so they're not allowed to do that, I guess.
He's mad that semantics keeps him from chastising women who don't want to be pregnant.
I think he's mad that people are saying you're not just blocking abortions, you're literally punishing women who have miscarriages.
I see.
I think that's what he's mad at. But he's a misogynist, he's a bigot all around.
I don't know. Between him and me, who do you think has had more miscarriages?
Who knows? Well,
listen, I don't know his life. I don't know his life, but right. I'm at one. So if he wants to check in and see how that would affect me, I can give him my email.
I'll beat you to the punch. He doesn't care.
Oh, yeah. I forgot because I am a human woman.
Yeah. In Oklahoma, by the way, women are literally fleeing the state in order to obtain medical care because of anti-abortion laws imposed by GOP lawmakers like him. He does not care either. Here's maybe the good news in all of this. Despite everything he said, it looked like he didn't have a lot of allies.
Yeah,
when
what
he
was
said
the reaction from his cohorts?
They didn't say much. The
nobody
debate,
like took him to task.
Democrats, the four of them that live in Oklahoma, they did take him to task, but no one was listening to them.
Yeah,
and the Republicans just didn't really say much.
Really,
but despite all the commentary from this guy, the bill to broaden the corporal punishment exemption. Remember. Overall, it's still kind of shitty, but like good on this little piece of the puzzle.
Progressing
like,
well.
So that did pass in the state Senate on a 31-11 vote. And most of those came from Republicans, like the 31. So good. Like all the no votes did come from Republicans obviously.
All of the people who voted were Republicans. Yeah. So I'm not sure why you're delineating.
But because remember, they revised that bill a little bit. It has to go back to the House and then the governor has to sign it. But again, at this point, it looks like that's a foregone conclusion because, again, very few people seem to be against like broadening the exemption. So the bottom line is corporal punishment. It's still legal in Oklahoma, which is a travesty, but I guess some kids will be immune from the consequences of Republican cruelty. Yay.
I can't believe there's 3,000 incidents a year, reported incidents a year of teachers using corporal punishment on children. Like what? You know, my brother and I recently, we went on a hike together with his kids and our spouses, and we were talking about this exact thing of like, when people talk about hitting their kids, like, how does that feel to as a dad? And he was like, I can't relate to it. I cannot. He's just so like, it's just not in my, anywhere in my body that's like, oh, my 2-year-old son is doing something. I'm going to hit him with my grown adult human man hand.
Yeah.
Fucking insane, these people. Fuck, man.
I don't know where
these
they get
poor
it from.
Children. Yeah, you do the Bible.
Yeah, well, let's talk about something uplifting: homelessness.
I think you were being sarcastic.
A little bit. The Supreme Court heard a case this week. It's probably the biggest homelessness case in front of the court in several decades.
Sorry, are people getting sued for being homeless again?
More or less.
Okay.
It's a case that revolves around how cities should deal with homelessness. And here's the case, and I'll tell you why I'm bringing this up here, because there is a religious element to it. But basically, the case involves the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, where basically there are more homeless people than available beds and shelters. Wow. And city leaders have chosen to address this issue not by building affordable housing or more shelters, but basically by fining people hundreds of dollars for using blankets, pillows, or cardboard boxes on the streets. And when homeless people accrue multiple fines, they can then be banned from public property, literally leaving them with nowhere to go.
How can you ban someone from public property?
Good question. And if they remain in the city, they can then be criminally prosecuted. Yeah, what do you want them to do?
Wow, okay. This feels like this, and what's the thing, something architecture that like makes people, means people can't like lie down in benches?
Oh, like benches that are angled and sloped?
Something architecture.
Yeah, you can look that up. Okay. I'm not sure the proper name for that. But anyway, a previous legal case already declared those kinds of penalties unconstitutional. Basically, it's cruel and unusual punishment.
Right.
So with the help of an attorney...
Hostile architecture.
There you go. So with the help of an attorney, a group of homeless people in Grants Pass filed a lawsuit against the city saying the local ordinances that punish them for the crime of existing are illegal because they weren't choosing to live on the streets. There were literally no options available to them.
I assume these people's goal, the city council or whomever, their goal is to just drum... homeless people out, just if we make it so
onerous,
untenable
to live
here, they'll just leave and go
where?
Be somebody else's problem.
Yes.
Oh my God.
That is what it appears to be. Yeah. And the thing is, so all the lower courts, the homeless side, they won the case. Like everyone said, yeah, they can't push you out like this. The city appealed these decisions over and over until it got in front of the Supreme Court. So the question in front of the justices this week was, should the city be allowed to criminalize homelessness, basically? And that would be a disaster, another layer of cruelty, if this Supreme Court rules in favor of Grants Pass, Oregon.
Like, okay. What part of the Constitution are they going to point to that says, like, you know, Thomas Jefferson hated homeless people and he wanted to make sure they couldn't sleep on benches, so
I'm
we're
sure
doing good.
Jesus said, screw the homeless, something like that.
Sure. I think that's what he said.
So forget the oral arguments for a second. I want to recognize that the plaintiffs are not kidding about the lack of options available to them, because when I'm looking through the legal briefs, one of the interesting things was they laid out what their options were in the city. They said there were four places they could go in Grants Pass. One is a sobering center meant for intoxicated people on public property. That place has 12 rooms, no beds.
Oh.
So that was option number one.
That sounds nice.
And that's literally for people who are like publicly drunk. Okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're just homeless, I know just is a weird word to use there. You can't even use that place. That's not meant for you. Okay. There's also a youth shelter, which is for people 10 to 17, and they could stay there for up to 3 days.
Sorry, they're kicking 10-year-olds out back out on the street after 3 days?
Yes.
Cool.
I mean, you can stay there longer if you have parental consent, which, as we know, all kids who are homeless and are 15, I'm sure their parents are right on their side.
What the fuck?
Okay. There's also a warming shelter, which is meant to hold people in freezing weather. Mm-hmm. That can hold 40 people, but that also has no beds. So that was option number three. Mm. And the fourth place is an actual homeless shelter run by a Christian organization called Gospel Rescue Mission.
Okay.
And this is basically the only viable option for people who have no other place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing about Gospel Rescue Mission. Yes, it's a Christian ministry, but they require all residents to work for them without pay for 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, in exchange for a bunk for 30 days.
That's a cult.
Mm. They also cannot look for outside work.
What?
During that month.
What?
Because you've got to focus.
On your 6 hour a day job scrubbing toilets or whatever?
I think it's like working at the church's thrift store or something. I'm not sure. But that's not all. They also
So they have to work in exchange for their bed. They don't get any additional pay?
That's correct.
Okay.
Then they have to attend church every Sunday.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be their church.
Yeah,
it just has to be a church on the list they give you, which, by the way, Unitarian churches that are not properly... That's right. They're not acceptable. Like, you have to believe exactly as they believe or go to a church that believes the way we believe. Otherwise, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
That's every Sunday. They have to attend a chapel service.
And sorry, is Sunday their one day off?
Probably,
because they have to work 6 days a week.
Yes.
So on their one day off, they have to do a thing, too.
That's correct. Fuck. They have to attend a chapel service twice a day.
Twice a day?
Twice a day.
Wait, twice a day on Sundays?
No, every day.
What?
And, you're a smoker? Sorry, no, you're going to have to quit cold turkey. Maybe we'll give you a nicotine patch, but you got to stop smoking. You definitely can't drink.
Well, obviously.
And... you can't have sex during your stay here. Oh, you're married? We don't care. We're separating you two.
Oh.
Because they have men and women's separate spaces.
That's fun. I like that. I really think that this is a really cool and humane way to treat people who are having a hard time, which frankly could be happening now, to anybody at any time.
You might be wondering, what if you're disabled? What if you have medical or mental health problems that prevent you from attending church?
Oh.
What if you are not Christian?
Then you
what
should if, just die, according to them.
What if you just don't want to participate in the religious activities? Too bad you can't stay there, then. Those are the rules.
Them's the rules.
So this is why the plaintiffs argued we have no realistic options in the city. So in a case like this, it's always interesting to see which groups are filing amicus briefs, like saying, we are not involved in this case directly, but we have a position on it.
Sure.
One side or the other. And
how do you qualify for an amicus brief? Can anybody submit one?
Yeah, I mean, they're usually coordinated by the groups on both sides of the lawsuits.
So if people don't know, it, like you said, it's like, I'm not part of this lawsuit, but I have a stake in the outcome.
But we're a nonprofit that does church-state separation work, and we have a firm position on this, and we have legal arguments on our side, and we want to make sure the justices see that before you rule on
it.
Right. Makes sense.
Yes.
When you look at the side that is on the side of the homeless people, there were a number of religious ministries. Very diverse ones. They include the Oregon Quakers, the Los Angeles Catholic Worker, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is famously conservative and anti-LGBTQ. They're saying, no, you got to help the homeless here.
Whoa.
Hindus for Human Rights. All right. The Cairo Center for Religions, Rights, and Social Justice. All of these groups
Cairo, Egypt?
I think it is an Egyptian group. But basically, there was an article at Religion News Service written by... Kevin Nye, he basically spoke to leaders of these groups, some of them, and they said things like criminalizing, exploiting, and hurting poor and unhoused people is an affront to God and to Christianity itself and to other religious traditions themselves. Mm. One group said that punishing poor and homeless people for the effects of their poverty and homelessness fails to honor the holy nature of creation and thereby fails society as a whole. The USCCB, that anti-LGBTQ group, said that the Catholic Church, consistent with Western tradition, has long taught that the homeless are to be helped, not punished. So, yeah, like, even all these religious groups from various parts of the spectrum of, like, conservative to liberal thought are on the side of the homeless people here. Who could possibly be on the other side of the issue?
Catholics.
Well, that would be Gospel Rescue Mission. The ministry that controls the discriminatory shelter in Grants Pass.
And what's their argument?
Their argument is that the city's inability to punish the homeless because of earlier court decisions saying it's unconstitutional has, quote, significantly decreased the number of people who access the mission's services. Like, because the courts are saying you can't do this to the homeless. They're saying, you guys, we don't have enough people coming through our doors anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is low. Okay, yeah. So they are making a capitalistic argument for the fact that the homeless people of
Grants Pass
are their customers.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are not properly penalized for sleeping outside,
then they won't come to us
to work in our terrible store and not have sex with their wife.
Here's what they said. Taking away city's power to enforce those laws, as the Ninth Circuit has done here, does not benefit the homeless, as that court evidently hoped. Instead, it has only hindered the efforts of those in Grants Pass who devote every day to bettering the lives of those facing homelessness. They are calling for the city. This ministry is calling for the city to fine and jail the homeless in the hopes that the ministry become the only alternative for anyone seeking to avoid punishment. So when you see yourself as the antidote, then you start to root for poison.
Sure.
Everywhere,
yeah.
Right?
They've got a cure that is looking. No. What is?
Yeah. You're a cure looking
for a disease.
Yeah. It's telling that in their brief, The word God came up zero times.
Really?
Which is very weird for a Christian group ever, but especially when you're making an argument to this Supreme
Court. And this is the U.S. Supreme Court. This is not the state Supreme Court.
That's right. Like, the argument isn't even a religious one, because how could it be? The ministry says, we have beds available, but for various reasons, a lot of them are going unused. And their argument is, we can take care of them, send them to us, but they won't come to us unless the city punishes them for not using us. That's kind of their argument here.
You guys.
They have to know how bad it looks.
This is the most insidious thing I have heard in a long time.
And, like, they have to know how bad it would look to justify the cruelty against the homeless using the language of faith, but they also seem blissfully unaware of how their own religious restrictions might play a significant role in why people who have no other option still don't want to go to them for help.
Still don't want to go to your thing.
And this is what Nye, the writer at Religion News Service, this is what he wrote. It may be well-intentioned, but GRM's Gospel Rescue Mission's plea raises serious legal and theological questions. If the rescue mission, the only option in town, can shelter just 138 people, how can the government criminalize all 1,200 people experiencing homelessness in the city?
Yeah.
Do Christian organizations have a theological mandate or even a justification for forcing religious programming in exchange for shelter and care? Can the government compel homeless people to stay at a shelter that has strict religious requirements without infringing further on their constitutional rights? Like, yes, those are all valid questions. The Christian shelter is not and cannot be the city's only viable option here.
This get to the point of the Supreme Court? This seems so frivolous on its face.
Listen, man, I don't know why they
it's
took it up.
It's just the right people with right money?
The Supreme Court could have said, we're not going to take up this case. We'll let the earlier ruling stand. And the earlier ruling said, yeah, the city can't force people to basically go to this
participate
ministry.
Participate in a religion.
Yeah, and you can't criminalize homelessness the way they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think Sotomayor even said, like, are you punishing them for breathing? Are you trying to go? What would you like them to do? Kill themselves?
Yeah.
Some variation on that. The long-term solution here, as everyone who has covered homelessness, read about it, knows, it involves mental health care, addiction specialists, affordable housing, secular, not atheist, but like secular shelters, not just banishing people from your city and making it someone else's problem. But right now, the city of Grants Pass is not giving homeless people secular, safe spaces to stay. Instead, they are arguing that the options provided are more than enough, and the only alternative is to further punish people who are already struggling to survive, making it that much harder for them to get back up on their feet.
Just
like it's
Jesus
just
did.
Insane logic. And the one Christian ministry directly involved in this case is going all in on more cruelty.
This is so a Are We the Baddies moment, don't you think? Like, isn't somebody on that legal team like, hey, gang, are we sure? Are we sure about this? Like, is this what we want to spend all of our, like, social capital on? Is making sure that home people experiencing a terrible time in their life, for whether it's financial or mental health or addiction or health or whatever, they aren't being punished enough? Like, what are we doing? What is a society? Like, what is the point of any of this if we're not going to help people who need help?
Because these ministries, especially these ones that serve the homeless or do this sort of thing, they want you to think they are doing these nice, wonderful things for the least of these, for the ones suffering the most. It's like, no, we looked at your paperwork and you are making everything worse.
Right.
So, like, I know you want credit for existing and having these 138 beds out there.
Yeah.
But one, that wouldn't solve the problem even if they were all used. And two, like, no, you can't just push your religion on them because these people have no other choice.
Yeah.
It's a captive audience.
And what a deeply Republican thing to be like, our thing isn't popular. Make it legally required, please. Like, isn't that so a thing they do of, like, they think that it's, you know, whatever product is best, gets the best ideas, get the most traction. But really, it's just like, oh, no, we want to do our thing. Can you please write rules and laws around that?
Yeah. Based on legal analysts, I read... the oral arguments did not seem to be a slam dunk for the city. it doesn't mean they won't win. They will probably win because it's a right-wing Supreme Court. Legal analysts seem to think the conservatives may try to limit the damage in various ways by making sure it's a very narrow ruling that doesn't apply everywhere.
You think that they're going to come down in favor of...
The city has the right to impose its rules, but maybe they will limit it somehow. I don't know. Don't ask me that one. But it would be nice, and I don't say this very often, can the justices listen to the religious groups making these sensible, albeit faith-based arguments for why criminalizing homelessness is only going to make a bad situation worse. Like, listen to the Christians,
fucking people.
Justices.
What is wrong with them?
Yeah. I got one last story for you here, and it's a surprising one. I don't get to talk about this much. It's about the Maori people in New Zealand. And this is interesting
because Maori, thank you
for correcting me. In New Zealand...
Oh, thank God I'm here.
Yeah. In New Zealand, more than half of the Maori population have no religious affiliation. Mm-hmm. That's according to the 2018 census. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a leap from the last time they did a census. It was 36.5% in 2006. Mm. So more than half of that population, the indigenous population, is non-religious.
Yeah.
And usually, if you look at where are they, if this number is rising, what's falling? It's Christianity.
Of course.
That dropped from 46.2% in 2006 to 29.9% in 2018.
Huh.
So interesting. So the question is, why is that happening? You could take those numbers with a grain of salt since a lot of them were missed in the census, according to people. But like, even if the numbers are off, though, something is happening. Mm-hmm. What's causing the shift away from organized religion?
People starting to read history more?
Maybe. In the United States, we have a sense of the answers. People no longer believe in the religious teachings. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Anti-LGBTQ bigotry pushes them out of it. Mm-hmm. Organized religion, that's a big thing. Their families don't take religion all that seriously. Their belief that religion harms their mental health, mm-hmm. clergy sex abuse scandals, maybe your congregation became too political. Mm-hmm. Those are all reasons in the U.S. people have given for why they are no longer religious.
Yeah.
And people can have more than one reason.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So what's the reason the Maori are leaving religion?
Because their country was taken over by white people who gave them a really, really bad deal by literally having their translated contract be different in the language of the Maori versus whatever English or French or whatever those dum-dums spoke then.
You're pretty much right on.
Well, you know what, Hemant? I did spend some time in New Zealand and it rules.
There you go.
Maori culture is fucking amazing. These boats that they carve, holy, you've never, I'm not kidding. Like, they are magical. It's fucking cool.
So there was a paper published this week in the New Zealand Journal of Social Sciences online. And basically what researchers did is they wanted to investigate this issue specifically. And they spoke with 16 secular Maori to find out, like, all right, this is a good cross-section of the culture. Why did you leave religion? What's going on in your mind? Because one of the things they found out is that in many cases, religion was so embedded in their culture that meant walking away from religion could also be seen as walking away from that identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a problem in their minds, too, because they don't want to turn their back on their culture. It's something we've heard from African-Americans as well, and Muslims as well. At the same time, though, there were people who believed that ditching the religion of their Christian colonizers would give them a better opportunity to explore their ancestral heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what the researcher said is before European contact, the Maori were polytheistic, but as outsiders began to invade their land, they brought Christianity with them. And as recently as like the 1850s, between 60 and 90% of the Maori identified as Christian, which is, again, a reason to ask ourselves, why are they now ditching that religion?
Mm-hmm.
And what some of the people said, some thoughts about religion sprang up more than others. The idea that Christianity that was the religion of the colonizers and why should we have an allegiance to it?
Yep.
That was a running theme. One participant put it this way. If I didn't have any other reasons, that would be the reason that I would never sit in the room with Christianity. It was a tool of decimation.
Yes. Yeah. Who said that? That was rocking. I loved that.
Yeah. We're not
that
giving cool. names, but oh, that was yeah, one yeah. person. Of course, no. Christianity was seen by some as a foreign religion, therefore not as welcoming. They brought up religious hypocrisy, the patriarchal nature of Christianity. They also mentioned having religious doubts, but they also called out how Christianity's claim to exclusivity usually involved demeaning their culture. Mm-hmm. Christians view indigenous beliefs as not merely incorrect, but evil or satanic. So for them, being pro-Christian was being anti-Maori.
Yeah, truly. Like, even, I absolutely and 100% on board right? for that.
Even when they considered Christianity on its own terms, though, it led to rising tensions within their community because when they cast aside belief in the supernatural, they said, well, we got to turn our back on some of these traditional cultural beliefs as well. And they didn't like doing that. And they said... This is according to the researchers. Nearly half the participants in this research experienced some form of discrimination and or felt marginalized and burdened by societal expectations stemming largely from stereotypes. To put it another way, some participants were accused by other Maori. Of not being true Maori because they said they didn't believe in God. Atheism, they felt, was like a white thing. And it didn't help, they said, that New Zealand's government, in an effort to, like, rectify past wrongs, are now paying more homage to the indigenous culture. Mm-hmm. But that means, like, how do you recognize the culture? That means recognizing a certain brand of spirituality that these non-religious people also rejected. Mm. So one older participant complained about how universities and government agencies kind of had an unwritten rule about this. To demonstrate your true adherence of being Maori, you must be able to do these things and behave in certain ways.
Oh, boo. Yeah. Oh, that's not great.
And so they said, like, to some extent, Maori atheism is politically motivated. It's a rejection of colonialism and cultural Christian values that go against their traditional ways. Like, the religion has illegitimate authority, which is why they are pushing back. So I found that interesting. Like, there are limitations to what you can learn from 16 people. But one of the researchers told me that she hopes, if nothing else, this creates a foundation for further research. Maybe they could do a larger collaborative study of indigenous religious change. Very interesting about something I knew very little about. I still know very little about, but just a fascinating insight into this part
of the world. Yeah, that's very interesting. Very cool. The Maori is a really interesting culture. Yeah. I would if you've never seen a haka, have you ever seen a haka?
Nope.
It is essentially, oh God, I don't want to get this wrong. It's sort of a war dance, kind of. It's a it's how they greet people who come to or greeted people who came to
visit
them.
Every video on YouTube when I was looking up this, they had some version of this
of the haka.
Greeting. Yeah,
it's Listen, if you want to see
an
adorable one of the Fasts and Furiouses did one with The Rock, and it was outstanding. But there's an especially good one. It's, God, probably 10 years old now, and it's a cop died in New Zealand. And as they were walking down the street, they were doing the haka, like, around the coffin. It was genuinely moving. Because it's an expression. It's a lot of big gestures, and they stick out their tongue, and they make these noises, and it's a... It is an expression of grief and anger and all of this stuff. So it's the All Blacks, the New Zealand rugby team, they do a haka before every game. And guess what? It's fucking dope every time. It's one of the best religious things ever. It's just fucking awesome. Anyway.
And with that, that's all I got.
Oh, cool.
Where do we find your people?
I don't know. I'm trying to be on Discord. I still don't really know how it works, you guys.
There
I'm
is
so
a Discord
sorry.
Community. They're fantastic. You can go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support this show. Leave a leave a review on iTunes.
Yeah, you can leave a review just like Mitchell.RySavvy.
Nice.
My go-to Sunday show, the 1000s to 2010s era Reddit internet atheism is very important and informative to me. And that's when I started following Hemant's work. Me too. Eventually I fell out of it, not atheism, but capital A, internet atheism, but I came back because of this podcast. Hemant and Jessica have created something incredibly special and comforting. They're both excellent hosts. I've had a Sunday morning ritual of sorts, listening to them for years now, and they're even my first Patreon's podcast subscription.
Aw, thank you.
Sending my gratitude and thoughts to both of you, especially Jessica, whose trials and tribulations, a little... A little JCS ref for you. Jesus Christ, here. Charles and Drew, I got you. I'm there with you. I've empathized with greatly over the past year, as I too have had a tough one. Thank you, Mitchell.
That's sweet.
That was really sweet.
All right.
They're getting nicer, you guys. Thank you.
what are we talking about in the bonus?
Last night, Wednesday night, I saw My Brother and Me, the podcast, at the Riviera Theater with my brother in Chicago. It was very fun. I also had my niece and nephew, who are about 2 and 4, and I had them over the my husband and I had them over the weekend, and we watched Singing in the Rain with Maeve, the 4-year-old, and she loved it, and it was a top 10 life moment for me. It was wonderful. And I also finished last night a book called The Hike. It's by Drew McGarry, who you might have heard of. I think he did like Deadspin or something like that.
Yeah. Really good writer.
Just finished the book. It's like a bananas, like, existential horror thing. It was really, really, really good. So,
and since you brought it up earlier, I want to talk about some internet atheism thing as well.
Oh.
Yes. All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye.